Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, June 20th. I'm going to focus this week on the unfolding Iranian situation, not as much on Wall Street, and for items such as healthcare reform and financial regulatory reform, you can go to my Week in Review column at stocksandnews.com. Let's call this beating back the people. I did note on June 6th that President Ahmadinejad will receive more than 50% and avoid a runoff. I just didn't know that the vote would be such a farce, that Ahmadinejad would win in all 30 provinces and in every social and age category. Plus, within hours of the election, we would not only learn the president had captured 65% of the paper ballots, later revised to 63%, but that exactly 1.04% were deemed invalid. Gee, it's amazing how quickly these were counted by hand, many of us mused. Chief opponent Mir Hossein Mousavi said the election was a dangerous spectacle as his supporters then hit the street. At least 10, revised downward, were killed in violent demonstrations. I hasten to add that I'm recording this at 8 o'clock Saturday morning Eastern Time, so don't know what's going to happen from here. On Friday, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, the supreme power broker, warned that the protest must end, saying political leaders, Reed Mousavi and the other reformists, would be blamed for any future violence. Khamenei also voiced support for Ahmadinejad, saying the president's foreign policy, Reed nuclear weapons program, and stance on social issues were close to his. Khamenei also claimed it was impossible to rig the election. There is 11 million votes difference, he said. How can one rig 11 million votes? Then he added the other three candidates had to appeal through the legal process as if there is one. Interestingly, Khamenei also said the election was a political earthquake for Iran's enemies, singling out Britain as, quote, the most evil of them. Some of our enemies in different parts of the world intended to depict this absolute victory, this definitive victory, as a doubtful victory, the Ayatollah said. Amnesty International said it was greatly disturbed by Khamenei's speech, as it foretold violent crackdowns if people continue to protest. For his part, President Ahmadinejad traveled to Moscow for an economic summit just a day after the sham vote. He proceeded to blast the United States. The international capitalist order is retreating, he told Russian President Medvedev and China's Hu Jintao. It is absolutely obvious that the age of empires has ended and its revival will not take place. And he expressed doubt about Washington's ability to solve problems. Iraq is still occupied, he said. There is no order in Afghanistan. The Palestinian problem is unsolved. America is overwhelmed by economic and political crises, and there is no hope in their decisions. The allies of the United States are also not in a position to wrestle with these problems. That was from the Daily Star of Lebanon. For its part, the White House and President Obama continued to talk of starting a dialogue, while Republican Senator John McCain said the president should speak out that this is a corrupt fraud sham of an election and defend democracy. President Obama took a lot of flack for a stance that was deemed to be wishy-washy. French President Nicolas Sarkozy, on the other hand, immediately declared the Iranian election was dreadful news. I understand why at first Obama adopted a wait 24 hours type approach. But by Tuesday, stronger words were required. Even Congress on Friday voted 405-1 to condemn the election. Following some opinion, much of it harsh towards the White House, but to Obama's critics, I would just ask that they not turn a blind eye either to the amazing screw-ups on the part of the Bush administration, going back to 2001-02 when they didn't support a budding Iranian student-led uprising, as I documented and pleaded for in my columns. Nor did President Bush act appropriately when Lebanon had its first crisis in 2005. also heavily documented by myself. President Obama deserves a share of grief on the Iranian situation, but I must have written at least 20 times of the Bush White House and its incredibly unimaginative foreign policy when it came to this region. I called for cutting dirty deals with the likes of Russia and France before the Iraq War, for example, as a way of carving up and pacifying both Iran and Iraq. The past 3 years, I called for end-running Ahmadinejad by negotiating with Iranian leader Rafsanjani. But now it's Obama's problem. Ralph Peters, New York Post. Silence is complicity. Our president's refusal to take a forthright moral stand on the side of the Iranian freedom marchers is read in Tehran as a blank check for the current regime. The fundamentalist junta has begun arresting opposition figures, with regime mouthpieces raising the prospect of the death penalty. Inevitably, there are claims that dissidents have been hoarding weapons and explosives. Foreign media reps are under house arrest. Cell phone frequencies are jammed. Students are killed and the killings disavowed. And our president is troubled, but doesn't believe we should meddle in Iran's internal affairs. Meddling in Israel's domestic affairs is just fine, though. Mr. Peters continues, "We just turned our backs on freedom again. Of all our foreign policy failures in my lifetime, our current shunning of those demanding free elections and expanded civil rights in Iran reminds me most of Hungary in 1956. For years, we encouraged the Hungarians to rise up against oppression. When they did, we watched from the sidelines as Russian tanks drove over them. For decades, Washington policymakers from both parties have prodded Iranians to throw off their shackles. Last Friday, millions of Iranians stood up, and we're standing down. That isn't diplomacy, it's treachery. Now our president's attempt to vote present yet again greenlights the Iranian regime's determination to face down the demonstrators, and the mullahs understand it as such. If we see greater violence in Tehran, the blood of those freedom marchers will be on our president's hands." That was Ralph Peters. Charles Krauthammer, Washington Post. "Millions of Iranians take to the streets to defy a theocratic dictatorship that, among its other finer qualities, is a self-declared enemy of America and the tolerance and liberties it represents. The demonstrators are fighting on their own, but they await just a word that America is on their side. And what do they hear from the President of the United States? Silence. Then, worse. 3 days in, the President makes clear his policy. Continued dialogue with their clerical masters. Dialogue with a regime that is breaking heads, shooting demonstrators, expelling journalists, arresting activists. Engagement with, which inevitably confers legitimacy upon, leaders elected in a process that begins as a sham. Only 4 hand-picked candidates permitted out of 476, and ends in overt rigging. Then, after treating this popular revolution as an inconvenience to the real business of Obama-Khomeini negotiations, the president speaks favorably of some initial reaction from the supreme leader that indicates he understands the Iranian people have deep concerns about the election. Where to begin? Supreme leader, note the abject solicitousness with which the American president confers this honorific on a clerical dictator who, even as his minions attack demonstrators, offers to examine some returns in some electoral districts, a farcical fix that will do nothing to alter the fraudulence of the election. Charles Krauthammer continues, "Even from the narrow perspective of the nuclear issue, the administration's geopolitical calculus is absurd. There is zero chance that any such talks will denuclearize Iran. On Monday, President Ahmadinejad declared yet again that the nuclear file is shut forever. The only hope for a resolution of the nuclear question is regime change, which, if the successor regime were as moderate as pre-Khomeini, Iran might either stop the program or make it manageable and non-threatening. That's our fundamental interest and our fundamental values behind that America stand, with demonstrators opposing a regime that is the antithesis of all we believe. And where's our president? Afraid of meddling, afraid to take sides behind the head-breaking, women-shackling exporters of terror, and the police in the street yearning to breathe free, the people in the street yearning to breathe free. This is from a president who fancies himself the restorer of America's moral standing in the world." That was Charles Krauthammer. For a little different take, Peter Hartscher of the Sydney Morning Herald. Almost as soon as George Bush named Iran as one of the 3 points along the axis of evil, he proceeded to put it in a stronger position than it could ever have hoped to be. Bush invaded Iran's traditional enemy and strategic counter, Iraq. By enfeebling Iraq, Bush strengthened Iran. At the same stroke, Bush gave Iran every incentive to proceed apace with its nuclear development program. How? Because if Bush's America was prepared to invade an unfriendly country unprovoked, then this was an excellent reason to develop a strong deterrent. And they don't come any stronger than a nuclear bomb. Bush's invasion of Iraq, with British and Australian complicity, was a stunning strategic blunder. Inadvertently, Bush had created the perfect conditions for a hardline, anti-Western, pro-nuclear regime in Iran to emerge stronger than ever. A sophisticated country of 70 million people with the world's fourth biggest oil reserves. That was Peter Harcher of the Sydney Morning Herald. Turning to the week on Wall Street, there were some decent data points, including further tame inflation figures, a better than expected figure on housing starts, as well as a solid reading on leading economic indicators, all of the preceding for the month of May. But in looking at the data of the past few months, while the environment is clearly less bad, it's far from rosy. Earnings out of FedEx and Best Buy told the tale. The former said the operating environment is expected to be extremely difficult in the second half, though there are some signs business is leveling off, while Best Buy remained cautious on the second half as well. Stocks did take a breather. The first down week in the last five as the Dow Jones fell 3% to 85.39 and is back in negative territory for the year. The S&P 500 declined 2.6% and NASDAQ 1.7%. NASDAQ is still up 15.9% for 09. The volume has been drying up recently as complacency sets in. In a story released after the market closed on Friday, General Electric's Vice Chairman John Rice was quoted as telling the Atlanta Press Club, "I am not particularly of the green shoots group yet. I have not seen it in our order patterns. At the macro level, there may be statistics suggesting the economy is starting to turn. I just am not seeing it." Well, that's not good. Rice continued, "We see a world where good companies and good consumers can't get all the credit we would like. Companies with lots of cash on their balance sheet are worried about whether they will get what they need for working capital and are cutting spending. Until that changes, I don't think you will see a significant rebound. We are preparing for 12 or 18 months of tough sledding." So what I just read doesn't bode too well for Monday's market action by my way of thinking. That's all for today. I'll be back June 27th with a full look back at the first half of the year. Have a great week. I'm Brian Trumbore.